Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, and for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. And I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. Of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pGann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pGann. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGann. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGann. Great show lined up for you today. Expect to be joined by gold medalists, silver medalists, bronze medalists, Carmelita Jeter. And she was big time in these Olympics, absolutely big time in these past Olympics. Got it done in 100. She got the silver there. Got it done in the 200. She got the bronze there. And got it done in the 4x1 relay. And she was very impressive in that relay. And if you look at that relay, that was a world record relay run by that team. So Carmelita had a very good Olympics. And we're going to talk to her about those Olympics. We're also going to bring in our Hall of Famer, Willie Rove. He's going to stop on by as well. And I wanted to get Willie's take on the whole Chad Johnson situation and how he feels about it and whether or not Chad Johnson will get another opportunity. I mean, as I said on this air on Thursday, I'd be shocked if Chad Johnson gets an opportunity this year. I think he's going to have to sit out a year. This is going to be the year where he's going to have to sit out a la a T.O., and let all this stuff die down and all the publicity die down from the whole situation with his wife, Evelyn. He's going to have to let that all that stuff die down. He doesn't have a choice, I don't think, at this point. All the stuff has to die down. Once all that stuff dies down, once he gets his legal situation taken care of, then I think we can start talking about Chad. But I don't think we're going to start talking about Chad in terms of another opportunity until the 2013 NFL season. I'd be shocked if Chad gets another opportunity this year. I'd be shocked. I mean, I just think with all his stuff, I don't think any team wants to touch that. I don't think any team is willing to touch that. And his production just does not meet the issues that he may bring to the team in terms of all the antics, in terms of the touchdown celebrations and all the stuff that Chad Johnson brings to the table, the twittering. The tweeting, I should say. I said twittering. I should have said tweeting, the tweeting, and all the other stuff. He loves social media, reality TV. I mean, he loves all those things. And I think at this point, Chad is going to have to sit this thing out, get his mind right, and have everybody forget about what transpired. Then he'll get another opportunity. But he's getting old, 34 years old at this point. And we have seen some slippage in his game. There has definitely been slippage in his game. We've seen it. There's slippage in his game. So, I mean, we'll see what this whole situation with Chad Johnson. I hope he gets another opportunity this year. I really do. I really hope he gets another opportunity. But I'd be shocked if he does. I'll be absolutely shocked if he does. And just last night, let's move on to the field. Last night, preseason action got going again. Week two of the preseason, and a lot of the various storylines, a lot of interesting things going on this preseason. And one of those things is Arizona with the battle for the quarterback spot between Kevin Cobb and John Skelton. And interesting comments made by Raiders defensive tackle last night, Tommy Kelly, and his Raiders defeated the Cardinals beat the Raiders last night, but it doesn't matter, it's preseason, who cares. But anyway, Tommy Kelly had this to say about Kevin Cobb. Kelly went on to say he is skittish, he is scared back there. Anytime anybody gets close to him, he starts looking at the refs. As a defensive lineman, you love a quarterback like that. He ain't even trying to look at the routes no more. He is paying attention to us. You ain't going to get nothing done like that. And those are the words of Tom and Kelly. Interesting words of Tom and Kelly. And, you know, when you hear those type of things, when you hear those type of things about a quarterback, you hear players talking about a quarterback and calling a player scared, you know, they know. Players know. I mean, it's just like an animal who smells blood. They know a dog can sense fear. Players can sense fears. Players can sense fear. They can sense when someone is scared. And they're sensing, and they know that Kevin Cobb is scared. He's scared back there, according to Tommy Kelly. He's scared back there, according to Tommy Kelly. He's skittish in the pocket. He's skittish. He's always looking at the refs. And that's definitely going to have to change if the Arizona Cardinals are going to be successful, more so if Kevin Cobb being successful. I mean, the reality is he's in a battle for his job with John Skelton. And the more you look at this thing, the more you're looking at Kevin Cobb may not be a starter in this league. He may not be a starter in this league. Doesn't look like his offensive line is the greatest because he seemed to be under attack a lot. But he just does not look the part as an NFL quarterback in terms of an NFL starting quarterback. I think he's a backup in this league, but in terms of an NFL starting quarterback, he just does not look the part. He can't stay healthy. I mean, he's had issues staying healthy in Philly, issues staying healthy in Arizona. Can't stay healthy. He cannot stay healthy. And because of that, because of those things, because of his inability to stay healthy, because of his play in general, I would be shocked. No, I wouldn't be shocked, but because Arizona invested a lot of money in this guy, $20 million guaranteed, 5 years, $63 million, $20 million, which was guaranteed in that deal for Kevin Cobb. And they gave up a second rounder, and they gave up Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. So they gave up a lot of stuff to get Kevin Cobb. They gave up a lot to get Kevin Cobb, a lot. They gave up a lot. They gave up a lot to get Kevin Cobb. And with the hope that he would be the guy that would lead them into the future. But it looks like Arizona, and Arizona at the time was a desperate franchise, desperate for a quarterback. They needed a quarterback at the time. They were just coming off the year with Derek Anderson, and Derek Anderson was an abysmal failure for the Arizona Cardinals. So they had to make some kind of splash. They needed a quarterback. And in order to do that, they had to overpay, and they had to go out. And when you're desperate sometimes, desperate people sometimes make bad decisions. And the Cardinals were desperate at the time. They were very desperate at the time. And because of their desperation, they had to make a move. Not a good move, obviously, but they had to make a move. And the move they decided to make was to bring in Kevin Cobb. They had to bring in, they thought bringing in Kevin Cobb would be the move for this ball club. It would help this ball club. It would make this team a better team. And you look at Arizona a couple years ago, I mean, their issue was quarterback. I mean, Derek Anderson was not good. Their issue was quarterback. And I guess they thought, not guess, they obviously thought that Kevin Cobb could come in and stabilize the position. And at the time, I mean, yes, Kevin Cobb was unproven at the time, but he showed flashes. He definitely showed flashes of a guy that can get it done. He definitely showed those flashes. But as we look at it now, Kevin Cobb, right now, he may not get another opportunity. And this is, we'll see what happens with this whole Arizona Cardinals situation. You're listening to Go For It on Block Talk Radio.
Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Picturica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man, Paulie G, and Jeremy. Get it!
And we're about to get it right now. But about to bring in someone who had a great time in London a couple weeks ago. A great time. Last week, I should say. She had a great time in London. Silver medalist in the 100 meters. Bronze medalist in the 200 meter. And a gold medalist in the 4x100 meter relay. I mean, this girl did it all in London. Let's bring her in now. Let's bring her in now. Gold medalist, silver medalist, bronze medalist, the one, the only, Carmelita Jetter. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
And like I said, you did it all in those games. But I want to go back a couple years, and I want to go back to 2008, because what happened in 2008 may be the reason you did so well in 2012. You failed to qualify for the Olympics in 2008. How much did that failure help you in 2012?
Oh, it helped me so much. You know, they always say everything happens for a reason, and I didn't make the team in 2008, and that caused me to change coaches. So I got a chance to go with my coach, John Smith, and my attitude changed. I looked at the sport more as my career instead of just something I was doing. So,
right.
You know, I was upset at the moment that I didn't make the team, but that energy just fueled me to be as productive as I was up to 2012.
Was it 4 long years?
You know, I needed that fuel, though. You know, sometimes
okay.
You need something to push you into the right direction. And so I don't regret not making the team in 2008. I definitely think it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And it showed up in 2012, 2011, 2010. I've had amazing years since 2008, and I definitely owe it to not making the team in 2008.
And let's start with the 100 now at the Olympics. I mean, you would get the silver medal in that particular race, a very close race. Looking back at that race, and I mean, as we know, a very close race, is there anything you could have done differently to get the gold?
You know, you can always say, I should have did this, I could have done that. And, you know, when you're in the heat of the battle, it is what it is. You know, you go out there and you give it your all. When I crossed the finish line, I gave it everything I had, so I couldn't be upset. But, you know, of course, you always think if there's something that you possibly could have done a little better. But, you know, that was the medal that God provided me. And
right.
I'm pleased with my medal. I'm very gracious to get my medal. So, you know, I take it as that was my first Olympics. I got a silver medal, and I have nothing to be upset about.
And let's go to the 200 meter now. You were very successful in there, and you were looking to make history in this particular event. Ultimately, you would get the bronze medal in this race, and you would become the first woman since Flo-Jo in 1988 to medal in the 100 and the 200. How much does that feat mean to you? How big is that for you?
You know, it was amazing. You know, even to just have my name somewhere near Flo-Jo's name, you know, we're all trying to run that 10-4. But for people to say, oh, she's done something that's only been done since Flo-Jo, is amazing. You know, Florence Griffith-Joyner was an amazing athlete. And
right.
She's somebody that I'm like, I would love, you know, to run 10-4 or to have her name and then my name next to it. So that was definitely an accomplishment. To hear people say that it hasn't been done since Flo-Jo.
And how difficult of a feat is that to medal in both the 100 and the 200? Kind of put it in perspective for us.
You know, it's definitely, you know, hard to medal in two events because you have to train differently. You know, you just can't focus on one race. You know, if you're running the 200, you have to, like, run a little longer than as if you were running the 100. So it's not as easy as everyone thinks it is, because once you come back from one race, you have to mentally gear up all over again. You know, you don't just get to lay down and watch the rest of the races. I got one day in between there to really just decompress, get my mind back together,
right.
And go out and hit it all over again. So it's not easy. I'm sure it looks easy from television. But when you're in that fire, it's not easy at all.
We're talking to gold medalist, silver medalist, and bronze medalist from the 2012 Olympics, Carmelita Jetter. And now let's go to that record-setting performance in the 4x100 relay. I mean, before you got the baton, did you sense – that you guys were on a record-setting pace?
Yes, I did. I was the anchor leg. So it's also the most stressful leg because you get to see everybody else, you know. And the whole time I'm standing there, I'm just praying, please just let us get this stick around, you know. And Tiana Madison ran first leg, and she ran an amazing first leg. Then she passes it off to Allison Felix, and that pass was so emotional because you can see Tiana screaming at Felix. And then Felix flying down the back stretch, and when she's passing it to Bianca Knight, if you guys watch it, she's screaming at Bianca Knight. So every exchange was so emotional. And as I'm watching Bianca bring it to me, and I'm giving her the hand gesture, like, just give it to me, baby, just give it to me. And then she gave me that stick, and I'm flying down the home stretch. I'm looking at the clock. And I see 36, and I'm saying to myself, oh, it's going down. I see 36, I see 37, I see 38. I already knew it was over. Before I crossed the finish line, I already wanted to start pointing, but I didn't want to get ahead of myself.
Right, right.
So I waited till I at least put my foot down on the line, and I said, oh, it's over. I knew it was over. I knew we broke that world record.
And I look at that image of you pointing it to me. That was one of the images, one of the most poignant images of these Olympics. I mean, that was a big time moment. You got to get a picture of that on your wall.
You know, so many people have sent me pictures on my phone because I'm not yet home yet. I'm still overseas.
Okay.
And they're sending me pictures of newspapers and the front page of pictures, and it's all that one shot of me pointing, of me pointing. And so what I did at the Village, they had this photo place where you could get photos made and collages made, and I went there and I got some stuff made for my grandparents, of course. And in one of their shots, it's going to be a picture of me pointing at the world record. So the photo
Definitely.
Is amazing. I've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great, great photo and one of the greatest moments, I think, of those 2012 Olympics. And this was your first trip to the Olympics now. Was it better than you expected?
It was all that I expected.
Okay.
It was all that I expected. I knew that this Olympics was going to be great. You know, this year I lost my aunt to breast cancer, and before she passed, I told her that I was going there. And so for me to get there and to see everything that I saw, it was something I had already pictured. I already,
right.
already felt like I had been there. So it was everything that I had wished for. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
And just kind of give us a sense for the Olympics. I mean, a lot of us won't get there. You've been there. This was your first trip. Give us a sense of the Olympics, just being around it.
It's so much energy because when you run at world championships, it's only the track team. But when you run at the Olympics, you have the basketball team, the soccer team, the gymnastic team, the swimming team. There's so many Olympians around. There's so many people around, and the energy, the vibe that you get is absolutely amazing. As soon as you walk into the Village, it's just different. Everything's different. You're seeing different countries walk around. You're checking out different uniforms. You know, the media there is totally different because there's so much media and so much press. So much security, like, it's ridiculous. At one point, I was getting upset, like, hey, I'm staying in here. Why am I going through? You know, so it was an experience. It was like going to the White House.
Wow,
and,
wow.
You know, it was so hard to get to one place. You know, my publicist would always think that it was easy for me to get somewhere to do something, and I would tell them, no, it's not. It's going to take me about an hour and a half to get over there. When it was like a five-minute walk. Like, that's how so much security it was. It was amazing. And to be able to go to other events, like I saw my first swimming, you know, I went to swimming for the first time. That was amazing to be able to sit in the same section as the swimmers or I went to the gymnastics where the team won the gold. I was there. It was awesome to watch those girls do that floor, and the floor was going to make or break if they won the gold. And you would have thought that we were sitting there as if we knew these girls, like we were screaming, hollering, Gabby, let's go. It was amazing. It was an energy that you actually had to be at to really get the hold.
And did you get over to the basketball? I know your brother is Pooh Jetter. Did you get over to see any basketball?
When I was so mad about it, what happened was even the women's basketball I didn't get to see because they played so late. They played at 10 o'clock at night because I guess they wanted to show the television at home. So whenever they played, I would always have to run the next day. So I wasn't able to check them out at all. And I was really bummed about that because I really wanted to see the women do their thing. And I wanted to see the man do their thing. And my brother was in London supporting me. So he was going to the basketball game.
Okay.
And he was, either, are you coming? I was like, I can't. They're too late because the games were like from 10 to 12.
Right.
And, you know, about to back to the village and you're going to security, it's about 1:30. So it was possible for me to make the men's or the women's basketball game. So I was really upset about that. But I got a chance to check out swimming, Cullen Jones, Ryan Locke, and some other people, which was great. And I got a chance to check out gymnastics. So it wasn't too bad.
So who is the greatest athlete in the Jetter household?
The greatest athlete, all good. You know, we play different sports. So, you know, since we play different sports, you can kind of, like, separate us. You know, I grew up playing basketball. We all did. You know, we grew up in a basketball house. That we did. Saturdays, we played pickup games in the front yard. I was the only girl out there. It was, you know, drinking out the water hose. You know, that's what we did on Saturdays. And I didn't start running track until high school. But, you know, we play different sports. Pooh's the baller now, and I'm the runner. So, you know, we're both doing well. I'm very proud of my younger brother. You know, we're both blessed. And, you know, we always give God all the glory and all the praise. And so we're just blessed to be where we are. And we're happy that parents get to walk around with this Kool-Aid smile on their face all the time. They did so much for us and sacrificed so much for us, so this is our payback to them.
Definitely. We're talking to Olympic track star Carmelita Jetter, and looking back on the Olympics, what was the greatest moment for you?
The greatest moment for me, the moment that I remember is that was really emotional, and it touched me more so because, like I said, I lost my aunt this year, was walking in the opening ceremony, you know, because it was of the Olympics, and she would have been there if she had not passed, and since she couldn't be there, her daughter came instead, and it was probably the best moment because I knew I told her I was going to make it, and I did.
Right.
So walking in that stadium, I had tears running down my face because it was so emotional. It was really, really emotional. Now, on the sports side, me pointing at the world record was definitely but me walking to that stadium for the first time, knowing that I kept a promise that I made to her, was hands down the best moment of London 2012.
And let's look at you right now. You're 32 years old. When the next Olympics comes around, you'll be 36. Will we see you in 2016?
I'll be 35.
35, okay.
Listen now, I'll be 35. Don't be pushing me up there too much. Will you see me? I definitely plan to be in Rio, without a doubt. I have no intentions on leaving anytime soon. People keep asking me, you know, when am I going to retire, when I'm going to retire. I love to compete. I love the competition. I enjoy when that gun clicks. So when I don't love what I do is when I'll retire.
Okay. And you don't see that happen in the next 4 years?
That happened in the next 4 years.
And what about in terms of endorsements now? I mean, you were very successful at the Olympics. Anything going to happen in terms of endorsement things? Are you working on some things?
Oh, I leave that in the hands of my PR of the MGA Global. You know, that's their job. You know, my job is to run on the track, run hot times, and get the medals. And I leave the paperwork job and the endorsement jobs to, you know, the people that do that best. But, you know, I'm hoping for more endorsements. It'll be great to get more endorsements. You know, but, you know, God's going to give me everything that he feels I need.
And I got a perfect endorsement job for you. I was looking at your hair, and the first thing that kind of came to my mind was Dark and Lovely. What do you think?
That too. I was should be on a perm kit myself. That I should definitely be on some type of perm kit, dark and lovely, lusters, pink oil, you name it, I should be there. I definitely feel like my face belongs on a box.
Well, talk to your team and maybe something can happen. Hopefully you guys can make something happen with that.
Yes, I hope so.
And yeah, I know you have a website. Where can fans connect with you on that website?
You can connect with me at CarmelitaJetter.com, or I'm on Twitter, you know, at Carmelita Jetter. I have a Facebook page, Carmelita Jetter. Now, notice there's another Facebook page, and my Facebook page is with the purple dress on. So
okay.
If you see Carmelita Jetter, look, I have on a purple dress.
Okay. And if they forget, maybe they can think of Barney or something to help them remember, purple dress. Carmelita, it was a pleasure talking to you. I mean, we wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. Enjoy it, all these medals, enjoy it. Where are these medals at now?
I didn't send them home with my parents. I kept them with me because they're mine. Trying to get home. And I said, no, I'm going to keep them because I knew I was going to need them. My luggage is very heavy.
Okay.
So I've been showing my medals, and I've been able to, they've been very nice to me, let me say that, as far as over, so I need these medals right now, my luggage is still heavy, so I have medals, and I have USA pins that I'm passing out.
Okay, and I know your five cats, I know they miss you right now, too.
And I miss my cats, too. And, you know, they're so cute and lovable, and I can't wait to get home to see them because I know they're looking around like, where is my mom at?
Well, you will get to them at some point. And, again, we wish you nothing but the best of luck. Let's do it again.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great day.
Take care. 100-meter. 200-meter, and 4x1 100-meter medalist, Carmelita Jetter. I mean, she's – and I look at that when she pointed at the clock there. That, to me, was one of the biggest moments of the Olympics, one of the signature moments of the Olympics. And that image is a big-time image there. I mean, she knew it. She knew it as she crossed the finish line. She had it. She was going to be in the books, and this relay run was going to be in the books. I mean, the Olympics are a great thing. I mean, we were watching it, me and my family watching it each and every night. Very exciting time to watch. Very exciting thing to watch. Very enjoyable to watch, and seeing these Olympics and watching her, and you felt her spirit through the television. You felt Carmelita Jetter's spirit through the television. You knew she was determined. You knew she really wanted to be successful. And she was successful, very successful in these Olympics. 3 medals. I mean, she's going to take 3 medals home with her. That's big time. That's definitely big time. 3 medals she's going to take home with her. That's big time there. You can't take it away from her. Those are hers. Those are her medals, and those are her medals to keep. Give her a lot of credit, and it was a pleasure being joined by Carmelita Jetter, one of the stars of the Olympics in London last week, I should say. I mean, it doesn't seem, I was thinking 2 weeks ago, but I guess it really was last week. Last week at this time, the Olympics were going, and they were very exciting, very, very exciting. Dream team, well, I shouldn't say dream team, but the U.S. basketball team, they got the gold medal. The U.S. Led the whole Olympics in medals, so they were very successful in terms of the Olympics, very successful in terms of the Olympics. So it was a pleasure, again, talking to Carmelita Jetter. Make sure you go to our website, CarmelitaJetter.com. Also follow her on Twitter, at Carmelita Jetter. I want to go back to the NFL now, and before Carmelita came in, I was talking about Kevin Cobb and talking about that whole situation with Kevin Cobb. And I was on ESPN.com and saw an article written by Mike Sando. An interesting article, very interesting article, and it was a letter actually by somebody who basically stated that if the Cardinals didn't sign Kevin Cobb, they probably would not have had a shot to re-sign Larry Fitzgerald. And I look at that, and the price they paid for Kevin Cobb obviously was big. Second-round draft pick, 5 years, $63 million, 20 which is guaranteed. So a lot of money, obviously a lot of money. There's no getting around that. It wasn't cheap to get Kevin Cobb. It wasn't cheap at all. It was expensive, actually, a very expensive proposition. But the Cardinals, in looking at their situation, you had Kurt Warner who retired, and ever since he retired, they have not been able to replace with Kurt Warner, his production, what he brought to the Arizona Cardinals. Kurt Warner's play in Arizona is what probably is going to get him into the Hall of Fame. If he doesn't have the situation in Arizona, Kurt Warner, we probably wouldn't be talking about Hall of Fame and Kurt Warner. But now that Kurt Warner did what he did in Arizona, I mean, he took the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl. That's saying a lot. We know how sad the Cardinals have been over the years. He took them to the Super Bowl. That's saying a lot, folks. That is saying a lot. He took them to the Super Bowl. The Arizona stinking Cardinals were taken to the Super Bowl by Kurt Warner. Unbelievable. But they have never been able to replace Kurt Warner. They haven't been able to replace him. They haven't been able to replace him. And there's no way they could have sold this organization to Larry Fitzgerald without making any type of move for a quarterback. Kevin Cobb was the move they made. They have to live with it. But it's looking more and more, looking at Kevin Cobb, it's looking like this is a mistake. This was a mistake for the Arizona Cardinals to go after Kevin Cobb and give the type of money that they gave to Kevin Cobb. As we look at this whole situation, it's becoming more and more obvious, more and more evident that this may have been a mistake. And you saw John Skelton in there. He only didn't play much in that particular game, but did lead the Cardinals on a scoring drive, and so did Kevin Cobb. He led the Cardinals on a scoring drive as well. But Kevin Cobb is just, he's skittish. And I thought he was a little skittish in the pocket when he was playing with the Eagles. I thought he was a little skittish in the pocket when he was with the Eagles. And I wasn't one of these guys that was ready to turn the keys to the franchise over to, hand the keys, I should say, to the franchise over to Kevin Cobb when he was in Philadelphia. I was one who wanted to save and keep Donovan McNabb. I was one of those guys. But if you look at the whole situation where the way everything transpired with Kevin Cobb, you look at the move to bring in Mike Vick, and you look how much of a great move that was now. That turns out to be a great move by the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, Kevin Cobb has shown that he is skittish in the pocket, has shown that he has a hard time staying healthy. He's showing us that. That's what he's showing us, folks. We don't have to look very hard to see it. He's showing us that. It's very loud and clear with Kevin Cobb. Very loud and clear with Kevin Cobb. He just cannot stay healthy. He just cannot get it done at this point. I think the Cardinals, I think they want to give this job to Kevin Cobb, but he can't. He's just not taking it. They want to give it to him, but he's having a hard time taking it. And John Skelton hasn't looked much better, but the Arizona Cardinals were a very effective team when John Skelton was playing last year. He was Tebow-esque in terms of his comebacks, John Skelton. Very Tebow-esque in terms of his comebacks. Now, do I think John Skelton is the answer? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. He hasn't shown us that much. Definitely hasn't shown us that much. But he did last year. I mean, for the Arizona Cardinals, he was effective, and he brought them back into the playoff race. His numbers are not eye-popping, obviously. 11 touchdowns, 14 interceptions in 8 games last year for the Cardinals. Those don't jump out at you. Obviously, they're not good numbers. They're not good numbers. But his ability to come back in the fourth quarter, had some fourth quarter comebacks for the Cardinals. And like I said, he kept them in games and gave them an opportunity to, for a shot at the playoffs. I mean, it was a slim shot, but it was a shot nonetheless. Gave them an opportunity. But he played well for the Cardinals. He wasn't awful. He wasn't great, but he wasn't awful. Wasn't awful. Wasn't great, but wasn't awful. But you look at him in the games, in close games, fourth quarter when his team was up 7 or down 7, he was 41 for 72, 508 yards, 56% completion percentage, 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Almost an 86 rating, quarterback rating. Not a bad, not awful. A guy that seems to possibly step up his play when the chips are down. I mean, and throughout the course, I mean, his complete rating was 68.9. But in the fourth quarter, plus 7, minus 7, his rating jumped up 16, 17 points to 85.9. So, in the fourth quarter is when he was at his best. He was at his best in the fourth quarter. As a starter, 1,600 yards, 8 touchdowns, 12 picks for him. That was him as a starter. I mean, I'm not saying his numbers are not eye-popping, but he had some good games. And he had some comebacks for the Cardinals. And he was effective as a starter. He was fairly effective. I don't want to say he was great. He was effective. He got victories for the ball club. All he did was win, I guess you can say. All he did was win. I mean, but you look at against he was 5-2 as a starter. 5-2 as a starter. It's not bad. That's just not bad numbers for John Skelton. Not bad at all. Do I think John Skelton is the complete answer for the Cardinals? I don't know. Again, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so, but could he be the answer this year? Probably. Judging by what we have seen from Kevin Cobb, probably. Probably. And it's looking like he may be the favorite to get it, the job. It looks like he's close to being a favorite. You can argue who is the right man for the job. Is it Cobb? Is it Skelton? Is it neither? I mean, I think a lot of people, if they had to choose, probably would say neither. But Kevin Cobb, I mean, he's a $65 million player. He was 2-6 as a starter. Not good. Not good. Not good at all. Not good at all. Not good at all. 2-6 as a starter, Kevin Cobb. He wasn't good. Not at all. But John Skelton, was he much better? I mean, he was 5-2 as a starter. But I guess in terms of if you want to talk about wins and losses, it's all about John Skelton. If you want to talk about the investment that you made, it's all about Kevin Cobb. I mean, $20 million guaranteed for Kevin Cobb. $20 million guaranteed for Kevin Cobb. As far as I'm concerned, obviously you overpaid, but at the time you were desperate, and desperate people do desperate things. And when you do desperate things, sometimes you make mistakes. Did the Cardinals make a mistake? I guess only time will tell. But time is showing us at this point that the Arizona Cardinals may have made a mistake in bringing in Kevin Cobb from the Philadelphia Eagles. That probably was a mistake. And looking around preseason games last night, how about the Jacksonville Jaguars, and how about Blaine Gabbert last night? He looked sharp last night for the Jaguars. Looked very sharp for that ball club. I was watching it on the NFL Network. the drop-ins as they were doing for some of the games. And you saw the Jacksonville Jaguars look very, very sharp yesterday. You saw Blaine Gabbert look very sharp yesterday. I mean, he looked sharp for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Looked very sharp. And he did it against the Saints defense. That's, I mean, granted, it's the preseason. I don't like to read anything into the preseason. Not at all. But, yeah, I'm just looking around, and I saw Blaine Gabbert, who was impressive. He was impressive, very impressive, yesterday for Jacksonville. 13 for 16, 112 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's impressive. That's impressive for Blaine Gabbert. And he's doing it all without Mojo, without Maurice Jones-Drew, excuse me. He's doing it all without Maurice Jones-Drew. I was trying to say his nickname, but I didn't do too well with that. But he's doing well without Maurice Jones-Drew, and that is probably their best offensive player. That is not probably. That is their best offensive player. But Justin Blackmon called a touchdown last night for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And now you're looking at Gabbert and looking at the way he's playing right now. You're saying to yourself, I know at one point the Jacksonville Jaguars were in the Tebow sweepstakes, and looking at Tim Tebow before he was traded from Denver. And you see why maybe they didn't make that move. You see why probably they went in a different direction. Not probably. You see why they went into a different direction. And we all know what Tim Tebow is. Tim Tebow is who he is. He's a runner, but he's not much of a passer. Tim Tebow is who he is. He is who he is. And he hasn't made, I mean, he was successful. He did win a playoff game. Has many playoff victories as Tony Romo. But he is who he is. He is who he is. He is who he is. But Blaine Gabbert has been impressive in this preseason, was impressive last night for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they were impressive last night in beating the New Orleans Saints. Granted, let me say it now. Let me put it out there. It is only preseason. It is only preseason. And I don't read anything into the preseason. I really don't read anything into it. But, I mean, the way Gabbert played last year for Jacksonville, this is good. This is good. And for him to be out there playing some good football, that's big for Jacksonville. How good will the Jaguars be this year? Probably not that good. Probably not that good. But, hey, if Blaine Gabbert continues to play the way he has been playing in this preseason, that changes things for Jacksonville. That makes their situation better. That makes them a better team going into the season. That makes them a better team. That definitely makes them a better team. We'll see. We shall see. In a big preseason game tonight in New York, the Jets and the Giants, the battle for New York. And the Jets at this point have been getting all the headlines, and maybe that was one of the reasons they brought in Tim Tebow. You know the reason why the Jets are getting all the headlines. It's Tim Tebow. It's Tim Tebow. We all know the Giants should get more of the headlines. They are the Super Bowl champions. Eli Manning is a top five quarterback. He said it. Now I have to agree with it. He showed me. He proved to me that he was that guy. He proved to everybody that he was a top five guy. He did that. He did that. But we all know why. We all know why. We all know why. The Jets are the talk of the town of New York. It's because of Tim Tebow. It's because of Tim Tebow. And we all know why we're talking about. I mean, look at ESPN. They were stationed at Jets camp for the longest. Still there at Jets camp. I mean, everything Tebow does is a story. Oh, Tebow just peed today in the bathroom. He just went to the bathroom. He peed with his shirt off. A story. Yeah, I mean, and that didn't actually happen. Well, I don't know. He probably did go to the bathroom with his shirt off at one point, but it didn't happen to public. Tebow running in the rain with no shirt on. it becomes a story. Everybody's talking about it. Look at Tebow. He's running in the rain without a shirt on. Was it purposely done? So on and so forth. I mean, and we all know the Wildcat offense that the Jets plan to run with Tim Tebow. We all know. We all know the Wildcat offense is what it is. It is what it is. It is what it is. That offense has been figured out. We all know that. That offense has been figured out. It's not, it doesn't work over the long haul. And we saw Miami, who had so much success with the Wildcat offense. But as soon as defenses started to catch up, there wasn't much success. I mean, we all know what the Wildcat offense is. It's been figured out. Defenses around the league have figured it out. Defenses around the league have figured it out. They figured it out. It's been figured out. It's been figured out. It's been figured out. So it's not anything new. It's not revolutionary. It's nothing new. We've seen it before, heard it all before. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It does not work. So it goes back to, why did the Jets bring in Tim Tebow? You think Tim Tebow is better than Mark Sanchez? I mean, I'm not in love with any of the Jets quarterbacks. Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez, Greg McElroy. I'm not in love with any of those guys. I'm not. I'm not in love with any of the Jets quarterbacks. Never been in love with Mark Sanchez. Never been in love with Tim Tebow. Still not. Will not. Cannot. I just cannot fall in love with this ball club, with those quarterbacks, I should say. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't get caught up in these Jets quarterbacks. They're not good. They're not that great. I mean, I know Mark Sanchez got to the AFC title game 2 years in a row, but that was a byproduct in my mind of that Jets defense, of ground and pound with the running game. And we saw what happened when ground and pound wasn't all that good. The Jets went home, didn't make the playoffs. I mean, I don't think it makes any sense. I mean, how much can Tim Tebow really help you in the punt game? Let's be real. How much can Tim Tebow really help you in the punt game? Let's be real. I mean, last week I saw him out in the punt game, and I'm saying this is just stupid. This doesn't make any sense. What can Tim Tebow add to your punt game, to your special teams? What can Tim Tebow really add to that? Maybe some fakes here or there. But what could he add, really? 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 And Justin Tuck has some interesting comments about the whole Wildcat offense, and his quotes were, in talking about the Wildcat offense, you definitely have to prepare for him meeting Tim Tebow because he is a dynamic player. But there ain't too many things you can do out of a Wildcat. It's pretty simple when you think about it. There you have it. So Justin Tuck knows that the Wildcat offense has been figured out. The league knows that the Wildcat offense has been figured out. The Jets are maybe the last team to figure this out. They don't know. Maybe they didn't watch the Dolphins. I mean, but they played the Dolphins two times a year. The Dolphins was the team that was using it the most. Remember, they drafted Pat White seemingly to be a Wildcat quarterback. Things didn't really work out there with Pat White. Didn't really work out in general for Pat White. So the Wildcat offense, it is what it is. It's not a recipe for success. It's not a recipe for success. It's just not. It's just not. To me, the more and more I think about this whole signing of Tim Tebow, the more I think it was just for success. publicity, and also maybe for the possibility that just in case Mark Sanchez fails, maybe you can try Tim Tebow. And if Sanchez fails, then the Jets are in trouble anyway. But if he fails, maybe they can bring in Tim Tebow, and maybe he can do what he did in Denver. All he did there was win. I mean, he did win a playoff game. I mean, we could talk about that 46% completion percentage. We could talk about that. We could talk about some of the horrid stat lines that we've seen from Tim Tebow last season. Well, one game, 2-for-8. 2-for-8, one game last year against the Chiefs. You see some horrible stat lines, some stat lines that you would never think you would see out of an NFL quarterback. I mean, you never thought you would see an NFL quarterback 2-for-8 in a game. I mean, those are things that you would just – those are nightmares. Those aren't dreams. Those are nightmares to think that a quarterback could go 2-for-8 for in a game. Not practice. We're talking about a game. A game. So, I mean, Tim Tebow is who he is. And those New Yorkers, those New York Jets fans, I mean, the Jets need something to talk about, cheer about. They need to try to steal the headlines from the Giants. New York is a Giants town. So the Jets have to do whatever they can. Rex Ryan has to talk a lot. Tim Tebow, they have to bring in Tim Tebow, a guy that who's going to run a Wildcat offense that the world has figured out. There's no secrets in a Wildcat offense. The world has figured it out. Justin Tuck said it simple. He said it plain. It's pretty simple when you think about it. Justin Tuck said, there ain't too many things you can go out of the Wildcat, or you can do, I should say, out of the Wildcat. Ain't too many places you can go out of Wildcat offense either. Ain't too many things you can do out of the Wildcat offense. Justin Tuck, I think you're on to something. But I think you're saying something that the whole league knows. You're preaching to the choir. You're preaching to the choir. We all know it. We all know it. We all know it. Tim Tebow, the Wildcat offense, it is what it is. And let's call it what it is. A publicity stunt. Bringing in Tim Tebow was nothing more than bringing publicity to your team. It was a publicity stunt. Granted, you can legitimize it by saying and seeing what Tim Tebow did in terms of winning a playoff game and getting the Broncos to the playoffs. You can legitimize it by saying that Tim Tebow is going to come in and play the Wildcat offense and do some things in the red zone. You can legitimize it by saying Tim Tebow is going to be on special teams. You can legitimize it in every which way you want to. But as far as I'm concerned, we saw Tim Tebow. We know what it is. I don't think it's going to get much better than that. It's not going to get much better than that. It's not. It's not. It's not going to get much better than what we have already saw with Tim Tebow. It's not. But the mania. We've seen Hulkamania with Hulk Hogan. We've seen Linsanity with Jeremy Lin. And now we see Tebow Mania with Tim Tebow. The mania is what brought Tim Tebow to the Jets. And it's the reason why the Jets brought Tim Tebow to New York. The mania. You can't tell me. I mean, what have we seen? I mean, okay, let me say it again. He was effective as a starter. 7-4 as a starter. He was effective. He was effective as a starter. Fairly effective. And he took it over. He took over the Denver Broncos, and at the time, the Broncos were going nowhere. They were in Andrew Luck sweepstakes at that point. 1-4, left for dead pretty much. And then this savior, I guess, a savior was born in some respect, Tim Tebow. He came off the bench, and his first start against the Miami Dolphins, he seemingly walked on water in that particular game because he played bad the whole game, but they got an onside kick, and Tebow scored 2 touchdowns late, or led 2 scoring drives late in that particular game, and ultimately the Dolphins were able to win the game in overtime. He walked on water there, everybody. He walked on water against the Dolphins. Walked on there. Came in that particular game. And he was the starter in that game. And the Dolphins were dominating in that game. The Broncos just looked horrible. And Tebow, when the chips were down, he did this thing in the fourth quarter. You look at the Bears game. I mean, when the Bears were dominating that game. And Marion Barber, for the Chicago Bears, takes a run late in the game. The Bears up in that particular game. He takes a run, and inexplicably, steps out of bounds. Then Tebow somehow turned water into wine and got the Broncos that particular victory. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on and on with some of the miracles that Tim Tebow, some of the miracles that he's had. Some of the miracles. The miracle of Tim Tebow. I mean, it just goes on and on. Some of the things he did last year. It was amazing. It was great television. It was great theater. You couldn't. I mean, it was reality TV at its best. And that's what sports are, reality TV. It was reality TV at its best. At its best. And oh, by the way, we go to the playoffs now against the Pittsburgh Steelers, a game that no one gave the Broncos a chance in, a game that everyone said the Broncos had no shot, except for Paul Gant. Except for Paul Gant. You need proof? Take a listen. Big Ben is not Big Ben, and I don't think he will be, and he has not been these past couple weeks. I think the Denver Broncos, not think, I believe, I know, actually, that the Denver Broncos will get this victory, pull off the upset, and win. There you have it. I said it at the time. I said it at the time. I said that. Those are my words way back then. I said that. I said that. And then we go to that particular game, and Tim Tebow throwing a ball left and right against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, absolutely on point against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, getting it done against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And guess what happens? 10 for 21. And somehow, some way, you know how much yardage he had in that game? 316. 316. 316. It's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing, the miracles of Tim Tebow, the miracles of this guy. I mean, it's amazing. Just some of the miracles. So many miracles for Tim Tebow. So many miracles. So many miracles. You can even look at that 2-for-8 game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Guess what? 2 completions. But one of those completions was a 56-yard touchdown to Aaron Decker. A 56-yard touchdown to Decker. The miracles of Tim Tebow. The miracles of Tim Tebow. So many miracles by Tim Tebow. The miracles, will they continue in 2012? Will he get an opportunity to continue the miracles? Looking at the Jets quarterback situation, he may just get that opportunity. And we could see more miracles out of Tim Tebow. The second hour of Go For It starts right now. Hour of Go For It starts now. In this hour, we're going to be joined by Hall of Famer Willie Rofe. And we're going to talk to Willie and get his thoughts on the whole Chad Johnson thing, how he feels about it. And as we all know, Chad Johnson, we all know the story. Released by the Denver, not the Denver Broncos, I got Tim Tebow on my mind. Released by the Miami Dolphins. Chad Johnson, involved in a domestic dispute with his wife, Evelyn Lozada. We'll see if Chad gets another opportunity. I doubt it. I doubt it. At least not this year. We'll see if he gets another opportunity. I don't see it happening this year. I don't see it happening this year. But we shall see. I hope he does. I hope he does. But, I mean, and looking at this story, and I've talked about it numerous times. I'm going to say it again here. You look at his wife, and granted, if Chad Johnson did what he is accused of doing, headbutting his wife, that's the accusation. If he did what he is accused of doing, then I can't do nothing for you, Chad. I can't defend that. But I will say this. Right now, it's a he said, she said thing. History shows us. What we've seen on TV, basketball wise, we've seen a violent side to his wife. We've seen her throw bottles, throw chairs, start fights, so on and so forth. We've seen that side of her. That's the side we've seen of her. We haven't seen that side of Chad Johnson. We know he had one domestic dispute when he was in college, but that was a long time ago, over a decade ago. That's what we've seen from him, but I know what we've seen from Evelyn Lozada. I've seen the violent side of her. We've seen her violent side. We've seen some of the things she's done. We have seen those things. So, I mean, we'll see how this whole thing plays out. Because right now it's just an accusation. It's just an accusation. But sometimes in life, the thing about it, and I brought this analogy up on Thursday, and I'm going to go back to this analogy. One of my favorite analogies, actually. But when you look at Chad Johnson, he unfortunately falls in the category of the cute girl who's gotten the cute girl with the bad attitude who's gotten fat. When you're cute, and you're looking good, looking great, but your attitude is not always there, not always right, guess what? Guys are still going to want to talk to you. Guys are still going to want to spend time with you. Guys still want to be around you because you're pretty, you're cute. The moment that you start getting a little older, the moment that you start putting on a little weight, guys are not going to want to be around that because of your nasty attitude. And that is similar to what has happened with Chad Johnson, Allen Iverson, T.O. These are the things that have happened to those guys. They're just not as cute as they once was. They're just not that as not cute anymore. They're not as productive as they once were. So guess what? The moment you don't become productive, the moment that you start slipping, the moment that we see slippage, guess what? Guess what happens? Teams start walking away and start saying, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not going to deal with that. Just like the guys. She's big now. And with that attitude, I'm not going to deal with that. Teams are saying, oh, he's older now. With that type of production, I'm not dealing with all this stuff on Twitter, his Twitter antics. I'm not going to deal with his cursing at press conferences. I'm not going to deal with those things. Why do I need to deal with those things? He ain't cute enough. Meaning he ain't productive enough. He can't get it done like he used to. And that's what happened here with Chad Johnson, unfortunately. It's sad, but it's true. It's sad, but it's true. And I don't think Chad Johnson's a bad guy. I think he loves the press. I think he loves publicity. I think he definitely loves publicity. You can make the argument that he's a media whore. Definitely. You can make that argument. He loves it. He loves the attention. I guess we all love to be loved. We all love attention. We all love it. No man is an island. We all love attention. We all love people talking to us, talking about us. Everybody talks about everybody. We love it. We all love when we're on TV and everybody's watching us on reality TV. Everybody's watching us on the football field. Everybody's watching us. They love it. We would all love it. But just like anything else in life sometimes, just like any drug, we become addicted to it. Just like alcohol, we can become addicted to it. Just like food, we can become addicted to it. You become addicted to those type of things, and you need it. And when it's time for you to pull it back a little bit, you can't do it. You can't do it. You can't pull back. You can't pull back. The moment that it's time for you to pull back, you can't do it. You can't pull back. You love it too much. You love it too much. Chad now is going to have to, I think he's going to have to wait at least a year. He's going to have to look at himself and decide what does he want to be at this point. Does he want to be all over Twitter, tweeting left and right? Is that what he wants to be? Does he want to be a reality TV star? Or does he want to continue being successful in the NFL? Owners, GMs, coaches are not going to want to deal with all the other stuff, Chad. You're just not that dude anymore. You're not good enough anymore. Your production doesn't. It's not worth the headache. You're not worth the headache. You're not producing like you used to. You're not worth the headache. You're not. And because of that, you might have to sit out a year. You may have to sit down for a year and get your head right. That's probably what's going to have to happen for Chad Johnson. Stay off Twitter. It's no good for you. Stop cursing at press conferences, even though I think that's hypocritical for his coach to say that to him. I mean, if all the coaches are – Hard Knocks, I mean, you look at Hard Knocks. Look at the show Hard Knocks. If you look at the show Hard Knocks, that's public now. That's reality TV. Guys are cursing. Coaches are cursing on reality TV. They're cursing during practice, cursing during the games. Coaches are doing that. So the standard may be for everybody, you know what, clean your act up in terms of your language. Chad Johnson was criticized by the coaching, by Joe Philbin because of his language at the press conference. And yes, the press conference is more public than practice. Most people cannot hear what goes on in terms of language at a practice, in terms of the players and the coaches. But you watch Hard Knocks, you can hear it all. You see it all. And as far as I'm concerned, hearing it and seeing it all, in terms of the whole Chad Johnson thing, in terms of Joe Philbin saying, you know what, you need to clean your act up in terms of how you conduct yourself at press conferences and your language and so on and so forth, the way I look at that is this. The way I look at it is this. If he can't curse at press conferences during Hard Knocks filming, coaches can't curse. They shouldn't be allowed to curse. As far as I'm concerned, it's hypocritical. If you're going to criticize Chad Johnson for cursing at press conferences, as far as I'm concerned, during Hard Knocks, during this time, because it is reality TV, we see it all the time, we see it, we hear it, during this time, coaches need to watch their language on Hard Knocks. If you have a problem with Chad Johnson cursing at press conferences, I think at this point, at this time, you should have a problem with coaches cursing during Hard Knocks. You should have a similar problem. This is the way I see it. I think it's hypocritical. And I just think in terms of that should not have been held against Chad Johnson. Obviously it was. It went into the decision to cut him. But the ultimate decision to cut him came down to his ability. You can see past. You can see past a person's faults when they have so much ability. You can see past a bad attitude when she's cute. You can see past a bad attitude when she's cute. The moment she's not cute anymore is the moment. Is the moment that you can't see past that attitude. It's the same thing. The NFL, the coaches, the GMs, the owners, they're visual too. They need to see that you can produce. They're just like a man. And most of them are men. Obviously, all of them are men for the most part in terms of GMs and coaches. A man is visual. They're willing to deal with some of the faults in terms of a bad attitude with a woman, if everything else is right. It's the same thing in football. Same thing in sports in general. I'm willing to deal with you when you're producing, when you're cute. I'm not so willing to deal with you when you're not producing, when you get a little ugly, when the wrinkles start to appear, when the cellulite starts to come. It's no different, folks. It's no different. It's no different. It's no different. The moment that Chad Johnson became not so cute, the moment that he had years like last year, 15 receptions in a year, the moment that we saw a little bit of slippage, the moment we've seen those things became the moment that owners, coaches, GMs, it came the moment that they said to themselves, and they said it by their actions, that I'm just not willing to deal with this guy. He ain't worth it. He ain't cute enough. He ain't cute enough. Chad needs to think about some things. It probably is best that Chad sits out a year. That probably would be in his best interest to sit out of here. Chad, if I'm a part of your team, your PR team, your agent, I would tell you to just go somewhere and get yourself right. It seems like you have some attention-seeking tendencies. You like to seek attention. Thus, you're on Twitter 24/7. Thus, you came up with some of these various touchdown celebrations. Thus, you're on various reality shows. You like attention, Chad. It's okay. We all love it. But you got to put it in perspective. And if it's hurting you, if it's becoming a detriment, then guess what? You need to do something about it. You need to do something about it. And what I mean by that is you need to stop. You need to stop. You need to stop getting on Twitter, doing these reality shows. It's time to focus on your craft. And I'm not saying you weren't doing that. I'm not saying you weren't working hard. I'm not saying you weren't doing what it takes to get onto the football field and be successful on the football field. But what I'm saying is these outside things are starting to get into the way. Not starting, they got into the way. They're in the way. And those outside things are the reason that you're sitting at home right now. Those outside things are the reason that you lost some endorsement deals. Those outside things are the reason you lost your wife. And granted, we can go on and on, and we can have a separate conversation about that at some point, but you know, about his wife and how real that marriage was to begin with. But anyway, you lost your wife. It's time, Chad, to look in that man and look at that man in the mirror. It's time, Chad, to change your ways. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make that change. It's time, Chad. It's time. It's time to shut down all the other stuff. And speaking of shutting down, Steven Strasburg, phenom pitcher for the Washington Nationals, getting it done, obviously, this year for the Washington Nationals, playing big-time baseball for the Washington Nationals. One of the reasons the Washington Nationals are on top of the National League East is because of the play of Steven Strasburg. Getting it done this year, 14-5 record, 2.91 ERA, getting it done for the Washington Nationals. The phenom, Steven Strasburg. And a lot of you've heard a lot of different opinions on this. And it was my opinion at one point that maybe shutting them down was not a bad idea, or at least, and see, I wasn't necessarily calling for a shutdown. I wasn't necessarily calling for a shutdown, but I was calling for maybe just, you know, skipping starts here or there, doing it where, you know, that inning limit that you were looking at, doing it where you could be okay in terms of inning limits once you reach the playoffs, doing it that way. So, I mean, and the thing about it is, there's no definitive proof that says, okay, if he pitches X amount of innings, that X, Y, and Z will happen. There's no proof definitively to say that. There's not. And, you know, the more, as you get older in life, the more I realize that you only get so many opportunities in life. Yes, you have to think about the future, but but sometimes the future becomes now. And as far as I'm concerned, you look at the Washington Nationals, formerly the Expos, they haven't been at this point in a long time. It's been a while. It's been a long time, a very long, long time. It's been a long time. The thing about it is, and as far as I'm concerned, in sports, there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees. There's no guarantees. You can't guarantee that you will get another opportunity. There's no guarantees there that you will get an opportunity to get to the playoffs again. There's no guarantees. Life, there are no guarantees. The only guarantee in life is that you're going to get old, and you may not get too old, but one guarantee is you're going to die. That's it. That's it. Everything else is up in the air and up for discussion. But then the one thing you can guarantee is that you will die. You will die on this earth. That's it. You definitely will die. We all will die at some point. You will die at some point. You gotta go after it. You gotta go after it. You gotta go after it. You got to. You gotta go after it. You gotta go after it. You can't shut down this guy. You can watch his inning. You can limit some innings and some of these starts. But you can't. I don't think you can shut him down. I don't think it's a good idea to shut him down. He's at 139 innings pitched at this point. I know the mark they've been looking at is 160 to 180 in terms of innings. 160 to 180 innings is what they've been looking at in terms of the limit they went for this guy. I don't know how you can do it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. You can't. I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can do it. You have an opportunity to go after it. Go after it. You got to go after it. You just don't know what could happen in terms of injuries. You don't know what can happen in terms of injuries. You don't know what could happen. You have an opportunity now at winning a World Series. An opportunity of a lifetime. Those opportunities don't come all the time. They don't come all the time. They just don't. So you don't know when you will get this opportunity again. You don't know when you get this opportunity again. You don't. Do you go balls to the walls with this whole thing? No, you don't. But do you at least, I mean, they are monitoring his innings. They're watching. They're watching these things closely. They're watching these things. As far as I'm concerned, you got to keep going. You got to. You got to. An interesting comment coming out of the man who the Tommy John surgery is named after, the pitcher Tommy John. He has some interesting comments, and he said this: I wouldn't buy tickets next year. I would say, hey, go do it yourself. I understand where Rizzo is coming from. I understand that. But he's not going to get hurt. If he hasn't been hurt this year, he's not going to get hurt. And he is talking about, he is Steven Strasburg. Those are the words of Tommy John. Tommy John doesn't think it's a good idea. He went on to say, there is no guarantee that you're shutting down Stroudsburg down, that he's going to be healthy down the road. You want him healthy. I understand that. He is the franchise. But you know what? The golden ring only comes around on the merry-go-round maybe one time. There's no guarantee if you keep Stroudsburg out this year and keep him healthy for next year, next year, next year, that you're going to win. So, interesting comments. Interesting comments. And he talked about Jabba Chamberlain, and remember the Yankees with the Jabba rules. From the time I came back until I quit in 1989, I never missed a start in 13 years. Now, we were archaic back there, but here's my take on things. There's no guarantee if you shut him down. The Yankees screwed Jabba Chamberlain over. I mean, this poor kid has had all kinds of problems, and they had Jabba rules. It didn't help him a bit. He still had to have Tommy John surgery. And you remember the Yankees were watching Jabba Chamberlain and the Jabba rules and limiting his innings, so on and so forth. I mean, these are great points that Tommy John is bringing up. Great points. Great points that he brought up. Life, you only have so many chances and so many opportunities. Getting to the playoffs, especially as a Washington Nationals fan, it doesn't happen all the time. It's a rarity, actually. It's a rarity. It's rare. It's rare. It don't happen. Hasn't happened in a long time. You have an opportunity to go for it, and that is the name of this show. You got to go for it. 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 And what happens, happens. He might get hurt. He may not. He may need another Tommy John surgery. He may not. But you don't know. You got to try. You got to try. It could be like chasing a waterfall. But sometimes you got to chase waterfalls. There is no risk. There's no reward, without a risk. There's no reward without a risk. Risk, reward. Risk, reward. You got to take the risk. You got to take a risk. You got to. You got to. You got to take the risk. You don't know when this opportunity will come around again. You don't know. You don't know. And as Tommy John says, the golden ring only comes around on the merry-go-round maybe one time. You don't know. And because of the uncertainty, either way there's uncertainty. But this is not true and true. We don't know definitively. We don't know definitively that if you pitch him X amount of innings, that X amount of things will happen. We don't know. We don't know. You got to go for it. You got to go for it. You got to go for it. You got to. If you don't, you may never know when you will get this opportunity again. And it's kind of hard to sell that to your fan base, a fan base that has not seen a winner in a long time. It's hard to tell the fan base that you're not going for it. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. You got to go for it. You got to go for it. Make it happen. Watch the Nationals. Mike Rizzo, Davey Johnson. Go for it. The name of the show says it all. Go for it. Go for it. Go for it. Go for it. You got to go for it. And you can look at it. Look at his last 10 starts. He's only went more than 6 innings once in the last 10 starts. So you can look at that and show and see that they are limiting his pitches. You can see it right there. He went over 100 pitches in 5 of the last 10 starts, including 107 in July. So we look at his pitch count, 97 pitches and a loss against the Colorado Rockies in June 25th to be exact, June 30th. 67 pitches in a loss against the Atlanta Braves. July 6th, I should say, 107 pitches in a loss to the Rockies. July 15th, 105 pitches in a win against the Miami Marlins. 103 pitches against the Braves in a loss. And that was a no decision for him. 94 pitches against the Mets in July in a win. 65 pitches against the Phillies in a loss in July, July 31st to be exact. August 5th in a win, 91 pitches. August 10th in a win as well, 104 pitches in August 15th. In a win, 100 pitches. So you could just look at the pitch count and see that they are limiting his pitch count on some level. But he has gone over 100 pitches in 5 of his last 10 starts. I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, at one point I was a little on the fence and I was leaning towards limiting his innings and possibly sitting him out. But I think after just reading various takes and thinking about this myself, you have an opportunity now to win if you're the Washington Nationals, and you haven't done that in a long time. You have an opportunity. Tomorrow's not promised. Tomorrow has become today. Tomorrow has very well become today. And as far as I'm concerned, if you were a bad baseball team, I can understand shutting them down. You're not a bad baseball team. You're a good baseball team. You're on top of your division. You're one of the best teams in the National League. You're playing like one of the best teams in the game. You have the best record in baseball. You have the best record in baseball, and you're playing like the best team in the game. You are 8-2 in the last 10 games. You are 4 games up on the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. You are in good position here. It's looking like you are going to go to the playoffs. You're going to the playoffs. And you're going to be a tough out for somebody. You're going to be a tough out for somebody. I don't know who, but you're going to be a tough out for somebody. And one of the reasons you have been successful is because of the pitching you've gotten out of Steven Strasburg. I think it would be a bad move by the Washington Nationals to shut down Steven Strasburg. Tomorrow is not promised. You don't know when you'll get another opportunity to get to this point. You just don't know. Because of that, you better take full advantage. You better take full advantage. And you better keep this boy pitching. You better keep this boy pitching, Steven Strasburg. And you need to get it done. That's it. And I'm done with that. Let's move on to the NBA now. Oklahoma City Thunder have locked up their big man, Serge Ibaka, 4 years, $48 million. Serge Ibaka was a big reason and a big part of what Oklahoma City was doing this year. He is the reason, one of the big reasons why they got to the NBA Finals. His shot blocking ability led the league in shot blocking, 3.7 blocks a game. He's only 22 years old, folks. 22-year-old big man with a lot of ability, a lot of athleticism. A lot of ability out of this guy. 9.7 boards a game for Serge Ibaka this year, but close to 4 blocks a game. Oklahoma City did the right thing here, and I think it's going to come down to them choosing between Harden and Serge Ibaka. And we all know it's easy. It's easier to get small than big, meaning it's easier to get a shooting guard in comparison to how hard it is to get a power forward with the ability of Serge Ibaka, his ability to block shots, his ability to run the floor. He's got a lot of ability, a lot of potential. A lot of ability, a lot of potential. A lot of ability, a lot of potential. I think Oklahoma City really has no choice but to choose Ibaka over Harden. They had no choice but to choose Ibaka over Harden. I think it's a good move by Oklahoma City, locking him down. Because he was only going to get more and more expensive. He was only going to get more and more expensive. He was only going to get more and more expensive. Only going to get more and more expensive. It was only going to get more expensive, folks. So Oklahoma City Thunder, the Oklahoma OKC, had to do what they had to do. They had to do what they had to do. And that was, they're going to have to choose between, they can't bring Ibaka and Harden. They can't do both. And so they chose, essentially what we're seeing here, is they chose Serge Ibaka. It was a good move by OKC to lock him up. Derrick Rose, Chicago Bulls, Derrick Rose, right now he's saying that he is 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule. and he talked about the injury and what happened to him. And he's quoted as saying, "I remember everything. I remember jumping in the air, coming back down, and just that popping sound. I felt it actually tear when I laid all the way out and just let it go." He knew. He knew. And just judging by his reaction, we knew. But he is 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule. And Bulls management, Bulls ownership have said they don't want to rush him back. And I don't blame him for that. You want to get him right. You want to get him healthy. You want to make sure he's 100%. But I will say this, and we talked a little bit about this last week with the Chicago Bulls. I think they're going to be a team that's going to find a way to get into the playoffs because Rose is going to be out an extended period of time. He's going to be out an extended period of time, maybe the second half of the season. So you're talking about an 8 to 12-month recovery. 8 to 12-month recovery. And that happened in April. So if he does the whole year, you're talking about him coming back in April. But he says he is 2 to 3 weeks away. 2 or 3 weeks ahead, I should say. He wishes, as a fan of Derrick Rose, I wish he was 2 or 3 weeks away from getting onto the court. But he is 2 or 3 weeks ahead of schedule. So hopefully he can get himself back. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it would make sense for the Bulls to rush him back. And I think with Derrick Rose, it doesn't make sense for him to rush back. I think the Bulls, just like they did last year, I mean, the Bulls ended up last year with the best record in the Eastern Conference last season. They had the best record in the Eastern Conference last season. So if they can somehow keep this together without Derrick Rose for an extended period of time and keeping him away and just if they can keep it going for an extended period of time and do it where they can stick around maybe that 6th, 7th, or 8th seed, they're going to be that team, especially if Derrick Rose can get back, they're going to be that team that no one is going to want to play. No one is going to want to play that team. They're not going to want to. Derrick Rose makes them a dangerous team. Derrick Rose makes them a championship caliber team. He makes them that. He makes them a championship caliber team. So as far as I'm concerned, get him right. Hopefully your team can qualify for the playoffs, which I think they can, because as I said before, they did it a lot without Derrick Rose last year, and they had the best record in the Eastern Conference. So if they can somehow find a way to keep and stay in the playoff race, if they can find a way to do that, if they can stay in a playoff race, and then you have a healthy Derrick Rose coming back, and a lot of people will say, well, this is a two-year injury. ACL injury is really a two-year injury. It's that second year that you're the best. You're at your best. But if they can keep him healthy, and get him healthy, I should say, and ultimately keep him healthy, yes. But if they can somehow, some way, and he missed a lot of games last year, 27 to be exact, and that was a shortened season, and he still was tied with San Antonio for the best record in the league. If they can somehow, some way, get into the playoffs, qualify for the playoffs, and get Derrick Rose back, they're going to be that team that no one is going to want to face the playoffs. Because this is a very good team. Are they championship caliber? I don't think so, but a lot of people do think they are. they didn't have enough to me to get past the Miami Heat. They really just did not have enough to get past the Miami Heat. And judging by what we saw last year, there aren't too many teams that are good enough to get by the Miami Heat. Teams have gotten better. The Nets in Brooklyn, they've definitely gotten better. They've gotten better. The Knicks, you can make an argument if Amari Stoudemire is healthy. They've gotten better. Indiana's probably the same team. But Philadelphia, with Andrew Bynum now, they've gotten better. They've gotten better. So the Eastern Conference is better than it was a year ago. Guys, teams, I should say, have gotten better. They've gotten better. The Bulls, Boston, I would say, even got better. Even in losing Ray Allen, I believe the Celtics have gotten better. Boston has gotten better. And as I talked about that move all the time, I'll say it again. The only bad thing about Ray Allen leaving is where he went. He went to Miami. That's the only bad thing about Ray Allen leaving. The only bad thing. The only bad thing. But as far as I'm concerned, bringing in a Jason Terry makes them, bringing back Jeff Green makes their situation better. I mean, Avery Bradley, he gave them great minutes last year. As far as I'm concerned, they bring in a Courtney Lee as well, talented shooting guard. They drafted Jared Sullinger, Fab Melo. The Boston Celtics, to me, are a better team than they were a year ago. And they took Miami to 7 games. Again, the bad thing about it all is where Ray Allen went. It's not losing Ray Allen. It's where Ray Allen decided to go. And Ray Allen decided to go to the Miami Heat. He decided to go to Miami. He took his talent, to South Beach. He took his talents to South Beach to join LeBron, Wade, Bosh, and the rest of those boys. So if you're the Boston Celtics, you're better than you were a year ago. But your problem, and a lot of other people's problems in the Eastern Conference and in the league general, and in the league period, is where Ray Allen decided to go. He decided to go to Miami, and he makes the Heat team that much better. He makes that Heat team better. He makes a championship team better. He makes a team that's going to have Dwayne Wade at 100% better. They're better. They're better, and they were very good last year. The Miami Heat are a better team than they were a year ago. It's hard not to be when you add Ray Allen. It's hard not to be when you have 3 studs on your roster. Mario Chalmers was big time for the Miami Heat in the playoffs. And they added Rashard Lewis, a 6'10 forward who can knock the shots down from downtown, from 3-point land. So, far as I'm concerned, if the Chicago Bulls, and going back to the Chicago Bulls, if the Chicago Bulls can keep it close, if they can keep it somehow close, meaning get into the playoffs, all they have to do is qualify. Get one of those 8 spots. If they can do that, and then bring back a healthy Derrick Rose, that's a team that no one is going to want to face. That's a team that no one is going to want to face. No one's going to want to face that team. No one. No one. If Derrick Rose is healthy, no one. They defend. Chicago Bulls are a team that defend. They rebound well. And Derrick Rose is one of the better point guards in this game. He's one of the best point guards in this game. He's coming off an MVP season. I've heard some say that the Bulls' time has went. Heard Charles Oakley say that on ESPN, that he felt that the Bulls, their time has come and gone. Look at last year for Chicago Bulls. It seemed like it was their year, or at least they were. I thought Miami was going to win it to begin with, but I thought Chicago Bulls could have gave them a tough series. Bringing in a Rip Hamilton was going to help, but the thing about it is, the Bulls could not stay healthy. Rip Hamilton could not stay healthy for a large part of the season, though he was decent in the playoffs. But Derrick Rose, that was it. The moment he tore his ACL was the moment that Chicago Bulls' season was over. Now, they could have got out of the first round against the Sixers if Joakim Noah was healthy, and I still believe that. But the moment that Derrick Rose tore his ACL was the moment that it was over for the Chicago Bulls. And you can even make the argument the moment that this little run by the Chicago Bulls over the past couple seasons is over as well. You could make that argument. I'm not prepared to make that at this time. I feel like the Chicago Bulls, I don't think their time has passed them. But I do think this, they're a dangerous team if they can qualify for the playoffs. Derrick Rose will not start the season for these boys. He might come back mid-season. Might come back late in the season. But they are a dangerous team if Rose can somehow be 100% and they can somehow qualify for the playoffs without Rose. But we shall see. Another 7 minutes left to go on the show. 7 minutes left to go. And speaking of the Olympics, and I'm going back to the Olympics now, we had an Olympian on earlier in the show, Carmelita Jeter, gold medalist, silver medalist, bronze medalist in the London Olympics. But another Olympic medalist is making news. Jeff Demps, who played for Florida, University of Florida, in college, has agreed to a deal with the New England Patriots. He was a silver medalist in these Olympics in a 4x100. A team that fell to Usain Bolt, Johan Blake, and the Jamaican team. And those Jamaicans were getting it done in these past Olympics. But Jeff Demps, a guy obviously with a lot of speed, a big-time sprinter, can do, might be able to do some great work for the New England Patriots in the return game. He might be able to do some work for them. Or he might not be anything. The Jets were a team that was interested in Demps, but again, he decided to sign with the New England Patriots. Speed kills. We've seen track guys in the past try to make the transition. You remember Ronaldo Nehemiah? Okay, decent wide receiver for the 49ers. You also remember Willie Gault, who had a decent career with the Chicago Bears, with the Raiders as well. Make the transition from Olympian or to a sprint star, to track star, to the NFL. Thing about the NFL now is this. Demps is going to be running real fast. But this time around, somebody's going to tackle him. Somebody's going to tackle him. Somebody's going to tackle him. He's not going to run free, run clear like he does in the Olympics. He's not going to run free and clear like he does in the Olympics. Somebody's going to tackle him. Somebody's going to try to hit him. Hopefully he can make the transition. I mean, he was successful at Florida, had a decent career in college. So hopefully he can make that transition. And hopefully he can be successful on the next level. But if he's not, at least he has a silver medal. I mean, not too many people can say that. They have an Olympic medal. Not too many Carmelita Jetters out here. Not too many. Not too many. Not too many of them out here. And Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, they're looking for an upgrade in their return game. Jeff Demps, with his speed, seemingly would be that guy, or at least would have an opportunity, definitely going to have an opportunity to be that guy. But with his speed, that would seem to be a perfect position, the perfect part for him to play with this New England Patriots team. But we shall see. We shall see. But hey, he had a good time in the Olympics. He definitely had a good time at the Olympics. And now he's going to get an opportunity with the New England Patriots. And like I said, the Jets had interest in him. So there were teams who had interest in this guy. But the Jets missed out or were not able to secure the services of Jeff Demps. And ultimately, Jeff Demps would and has signed with the New England Patriots. And so now, another few minutes left in the show. Like I said before, a lot of great preseason action tonight in the National Football League, the Battle of New York, Jets and Giants will get started tonight. And I heard Victor Cruz say something about his big play against the Jets last year in that particular game, his 99-yard touchdown catch and run. And I remember, and I said it at the time, that was probably the biggest play in the season for the New York Giants. That was the biggest play in their season. They were down 10-0 at the time. The Jets were in complete control of that game, and the Jets had the Giants backed up. If the Jets would have made that stop and stopped Victor Cruz from running 99 yards in that particular game, the Jets probably win that game, and the Giants are probably sitting at home, and the Philadelphia Eagles are the team that's probably wins the NFC East last year and possibly gets to the Super Bowl. Who knows? But that was a big play in that particular game and a big play for the Giants season. But the Battle of New York happens tonight. Tebow Mania continues tonight. Jets and Giants play tonight. The Battle of New York. Got the Cowboys and Chargers getting it on tonight. Redskins, RG3 against the Bears. They get it on tonight. Another opportunity for us to see RG3 and some of the great things RG3 can do on the football field. He had a decent debut against the Buffalo Bills. We will see if he will continue with his success against the Chicago Bears tonight. Much better defense So we'll see if he can get it done against that tough Bears defense. We shall see. We shall see with RG3 and the Washington Redskins. Great opportunity for the Redskins tonight. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgame, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGame. For everybody here, go for it. See you later. Take care. Bye.